Hello and welcome to Animal Companions. This is Joyce Vesper, your Sun Sounds volunteer broadcaster for Animal Companions. Today I'm going to be reading another chapter from My Beloved Monster, Masha the Half-Wild Rescue Cat Who Rescued Me by Caleb Carr, and if we have time I'll be reading some other articles and newsletters about the animals in our lives. We're going to start today's readings with My Beloved Monster, Masha the Half-Wild Rescue Cat Who Rescued Me by Caleb Carr. And in the last chapter, what we learned was that Echo, an Abyssinian cat, had lived with Caleb for many years. However, Caleb's writing schedule and work demands made it impossible for him to always be available to provide the attention that Echo needed. Ultimately, Echo found a like-minded female cat who lived with Caleb's grandmother, and reluctantly, Caleb granted his freedom to live happily with Princess, the cat, and his grandmother. And now we turn to Chapter 20, Bonded Fidelity. You've got to keep her in, I kept telling myself, for if I let her out and she bolted, possibly running into a bear, some worse creature or other, I wouldn't be able to follow and offer either aid or rescue. Beside, I even eventually concluded now that it was just the two of us in the house, and she'd calm down soon. But I realized that the house currently smelled of cleaning products. While many of the rugs had been removed to themselves be cleaned and weren't back yet, which meant that not only were Masha's favorite parts of the floor gone, but there were terrible echoes bouncing from the floor to the high ceiling. I, too, must still have reeked of the hospital, and overall Masha's home and partner must have seemed to her have changed. Especially given that she was a cat who depended so much on her nose and her ears to get her bearings. All this would only increase her desire, I thought, to get out and away. Still, my return must calm her down eventually. I just had to wait for that difficult readjustment, and all would be fine. Just wait. Hours went by. I was still half reclining on the couch, needing to keep my painful legs and feet on the floor, but wanting to get my upper body supine in order to take some pressure off my incision. For her part, Masha just kept crying. I might begin to drift off, but then she'd start in with another round as she moved through the house, apparently thinking I would, of course, have opened the door for her, if indeed she was thinking that clearly at all. I tried not to dwell on the central fact that was presenting itself with ever greater clarity, that my time in the hospital had thrown her directly back to the period of her greatest trauma, when she had been locked away and apparently forgotten. And that memory quite possibly was now overpowering, perhaps even threatening, the bond between us. The idea that her emotional survival depended on awareness that she could get outside if she had to and was confined, and now that survival was at stake. Dawn came without either of us really sleeping, yet she must truly have been exhausted, because she did take a break for an hour or two when the sun came up fully. Throughout the day she took several more breaks, during which I was allowed to drift off, but each time she'd thunder back to life and panic with new vigor, and each time I woke in a state of renewed panic. One more thing most people didn't realize until they'd undergone serious surgery is the extent to which the lingering effects of deep, general anesthesia can test your emotional stability, and for how long. But I had to hold myself together until Masha was what I considered stable enough to be let out, remembering all the while, through my own mental haze, those words about the Siberian breed being quick to revert to an irretrievable and unapproachable feral state if they felt they had been abused or betrayed. Masha had been able to trust humans once after having been so treated. Did she have it in her to forgive twice? I couldn't risk it. But that night things got very bad. Masha, I kept calling as she moved around the house. I'm here, right here. It's okay. Please, girl, you've got to stop. She never did, however, and the lack of sleep was by now amplifying the pain throughout my body shockingly. I made it until midnight and then decided I would simply have to try something else. I would have to gamble on our bond. Come on, you, come on, I finally shouted to her, hobbling to one of the doors to the back porch. Mosh, let's go. If you need to go outside that badly, all right, let's do it. But inside, I was on the verge of breaking down. So little could I contemplate her permanent departure. Still, I got the door open just enough to allow her out, then braced it so it would blow either shut or farther open. From wherever she was, Masha heard the sound of the door handle and ran to me. "Okay, okay," I said to her, what I hoped was more calmly. "No too fars, please, no too fars. You stay close to your home." Too far was the collective term we'd settle on for her riskiest ramblings. After that, she was gone, drumming down the porch in the angled gallop of hers, then leaping onto the lawn. And if you get yourself killed, well, just don't. And that's that, I thought, trying to pull a blithe cover over my actual feelings. I may never see her again. Collapsing back onto the couch, I muted the television and considered the true implications of what I'd just done. She hadn't seemed to recognize me when she was scurrying off, any more than she had over the last 2 days, and this realization broke through my unconcerned veneer in less time than it took to tears to well up in my eyes. Why was I on the verge of weeping? For Masha, of course, for the possibility that she might get hurt or even die. Thoughts made more vivid by the pain I was feeling physically and by the still potent effects of all emotional, professional, and medical turmoil of recent weeks that seemed to have caused that pain in the first place. I grew angry with myself over such self-pity, yet despair for Masha overcame that. I put my face in my hands. And then came a sound, the trilling noise that emerged from Masha's throat whenever she thought she was surprising me or just wanted to announce herself. I hadn't heard her come back in, but then I turned, as, with one good jump, she appeared beside me on the arm of the couch, trilling again, her expression transformed to the one I'd become familiar with over the years together. She started to purr immediately, and I rubbed her cheeks and sides against my shoulder. She hadn't been gone 5 minutes. "Mashi," I declared, my sadness, anger, and even much more my pain instantly disappearing. "What happened, baby? Did you get scared?" As if in answer to this absolutely, she let some of the trilling mix in with her purring, then slammed her forehead into my cheek before finally stopping and giving a nose a little kiss with hers. "What is it, girl? You've been yelling to go outside. What happened?" And at that buzzword, outside, she leapt down to the floor again and headed back out, mystifying me. "Now what?" I murmured, sitting back in confusion. As if to seal the deal, Masha came back inside again, this time after a mere 2 minutes' absence, jumping up onto the arm of the couch again and repeating her happy performance. She eyed my lap quickly, and before I could warn against it, came off the couch's arm and across me, inflicting a sudden dagger of pain right through my incision site, then flopping down on the dark green fabric next to me. She allowed me to pet her for a moment, delighting in my company, it seemed, but then she picked her head up alertly, having heard a small significant sound outside, and short back off onto the porch. This little scene played out a few more times in the next 15 minutes, as it would throughout the night and following day, and it wasn't hard to interpret. Exactly as I'd supposed, Masha was showing me that the bond that existed between us would always be essential, but would have to have, as one of its pillars, my guarantee that she would never be trapped alone. I did get worried when I once looked up that night to see an almost full moon, the August moon, lowering near to its setting. I hadn't thought to look for it before, but Masha had doubtless seen it, and it had doubtless contributed to her mad state during her imprisonment. Yet she kept coming back inside following each departure, even if she stayed outside a bit longer each time. The paramount considerations in her mind were plainly that she could keep coming and going, and that I had made to understand that I could trust her to do so. So eventually I did, leaving her to this merry game as I finally got several consecutive hours of sleep, and when I woke in the morning, there she was, sound asleep beside me on the couch. The overall significance of these several days was manifold. Driving the bond between Masha and me had always been a shared sense of what might be called the original trauma. Our attachment was real, deep, and special, not only because of our chronic physical conditions and how they were aligned, but also because of each of our personalities and how they had formed around issues of abuse, mistrust, and then the search for just one creature on earth on whom we could absolutely rely, which by a miracle of certain fate had turned out to be each other. We were, when together, at home, take either one of us away, and the big stone house became for the other an often intolerable shell. During the next few days of recovery, I left the same back door to the porch open as I hobbled around the house in enough distress to apparently worry Masha, just as she had been worried when the neuropathy struck. It was the only time I would allow a suspension of the no nighttime wandering rule, but I knew she was so concerned that she could be trusted to stay close. Indeed, once when I was changing the dressing of the incision site, she came in to inspect the wound, puzzled and troubled by the sight and smell of it. She looked up at me and opened her mouth as if to cry, but made no sound, to which I told her it was all right, that I would be okay, and that she wasn't to worry. But she wasn't buying it, and she never did stray far, day or night, from the house. I began to get stronger as daily installments of food arrived from my brother's house, delivered by my next to youngest niece, who'd even cooked some of it herself. But the long-term recovery would demand another plan, and whatever energy I had was being drained by reviewing the manuscript of the book I'd been agonizing over for the last couple of years and finally assembled, short a closing chapter or two just before the hospital nightmare. Then some adult members of my family, finally thinking straight, contracted the old friend of mine, the woman with the two cats who had visited several years earlier, and asked if she might be able to keep an eye on me occasionally after they all disappeared following the Labor Day weekend. As things turned out, two cats did a good deal more, arriving soon after the call, providing good company and cooking large amounts of hearty food that could be stored after she left and would last a week or two at the time. It was all sorely needed, as more publishing ordeals were pressing. However, over the fall and winter, the long, complex book did take shape, printed galley pages appeared, and I kept laboring away on final edits with Masha ever present. She had fully calmed down by then, although she seemed to know that I couldn't revert to our old sports. But by later spring, I began getting some back capabilities back, with the help of a couple of exercise machines that a smart physical therapist at the hospital had told me to invest in. Masha and I even had a few bouts in the basement. At other times, there was the mouse on the fishing line, who was taking on a metaphorical importance that I couldn't define, but was sure was there. The two cats continued to visit, earning Masha's friendship, although the two black cats themselves never reappeared. Masha had by then completed the process of queening, becoming the one and only cat in the house, and viewing any visitors by her own species as threats. She also learned to enjoy it when the person she knew as the man, my farm manager and the family caretaker, stopped by every few days with the mail and news of the cows in the town. And by the time the worst of March was passing, the atmosphere within the house was becoming nothing short of convivial. All this was possible because Masha and I now understood both the terms and the conditions of our bond, and watching her as she sat beside me while I labored over the galley pages night after night, I couldn't help but think back to my other cats and wish that, in their cases, I'd had similar understanding of their mutual commitment involved in preserving such ties. With most of them, I knew it would have made little practical difference, given my youth, yet I still thought that I could have done better. In another reality, I will doubtless hear their sides of various stories. There remains one of the only things in which I had and retain absolute faith. But for the moment, Masha was delighted to take on the job of giving me lessons in what it took to ensure a cat's complete fidelity, a large part of which would soon return to simply keeping an eye on her. My feeling better would make her feel better, both the freedom and the duty to resume more perilous patrols in the defense of her home and companion, and I would have to carefully monitor, if indeed I could, how far that zeal took her. Well, that completes Chapter 20 in My Beloved Monster, Masha the Half-Wild Rescue Cat Who Rescued Me by Caleb Carr. Next week we'll read Chapter 21, Devil Cat and Demon Dogs. Did you ever wonder why dogs lick their feet? Well, here's an explanation by Claire Mulroy. Puppy kisses can be a sweet sign of love from your canine, but only if you don't think too hard about it. Dogs' mouths contain more than 600 different types of bacteria. We certainly don't walk up to other humans and lick them on the chin to tell them that we love them. But there's a lot about dogs that differs from humans. Dogs have far superior senses of smell and hearing. Ever wonder what your dog is trying to tell you when they lick you, themselves, or random household objects? Here's what an expert has to say. Why do dogs lick your feet? When dogs lick your feet or hands, that's because they're curious. They're trying to get more information about you. Though they have fewer taste buds than humans, their tongues are still powerful tools for exploring and understanding their surroundings. Licking a part of your body that has a lot of scent glands helps them make sense of you, says Dr. Rebecca Greenstein, veterinary medical advisor for Rover. It's also a sign of affection. It's such a normal part of how they communicate and bond with us. Every person has a signature scent. It's influenced by several biological factors, your health, cleanliness, and whether you have a pet, just to name a few. All of those things together give information to a dog. Some individuals are extremely fascinating to dogs, and other times they go, "No, that doesn't interest me." So it's totally normal, even healthy, for dogs to have the dog-human bonding. There's no reason to worry. But if your dog is compulsively licking other things like table surfaces or carpets or themselves, they may be underlying concerns. Compulsive surface licking may signal that they are trying to soothe dental disease or digestive issues and is a reason to consult the vet. Why do dogs lick their paws? Dogs regularly lick their paws to groom themselves or remove dirt and debris, but if the dog is licking paws excessively, they may be trying to communicate to you that something is wrong. Here are some common reasons. A physical ailment? If your dog has something stuck in or irritating its paw, they'll often express the discomfort by licking to soothe or alert you so you can help them get it out. It also could be a sign of mites, common especially in younger dogs, which live in and around the feet. If your dogs have mites, it appears that they will be having red and itchy paws and may even have some hair loss. The doctor recommends thoroughly examining your dog's paws to look for gravel, cut, scrapes, swollen areas, discharge, blood, or unusual odors, which could be a sign of infection. But physical ailments aren't the only cause of paw licking. In fact, they aren't even the most common. I find in my practice people overestimate the idea that something must be physically in the paw rather than considering other things that might be going on, Greenstein says. If you've checked your dog's paws and can't see anything, it may be another common but surprising cause, underlying allergies. Excessive licking and licking multiple paws can indicate this, Greenstein says. The allergy could be environmental, like pollen or dust, or a food sensitivity. You don't necessarily have to have physical contact with the allergen and the paw for it to be a sign of allergy, and that's why most pet parents don't make that connection. Behavioral. Paw licking is also self-soothing behavior. It feels good to the dog and may become a habit or an anxious compulsion. Dogs can have anxiety and obsessive-compulsive disorder called canine compulsive disorder, and it may manifest in paw licking. This habit can be worrisome if your pet's licking is damaging their fur or breaking the skin. This is a sign it's time to see the vet. Before we scold our pets for licking too much, firstly, determine if there is a medical basis to this, and if there is, we try to diagnose and treat that, and once that's treated and dealt with, if they're still doing it, we may need to prevent the opportunity to reduce the frequency and severity of self-trauma. Common methods include the infamous cone of shame or dog booties, which cover the paw. It also is helpful to divert your pet's attention to lick something else, like a toy, a lick pad, or a snuffle mat, which makes an interesting sensory experience for your dog. When should I worry about my dog licking their paws? It's a matter of severity and frequency. You can start by examining the paw to see if it's just a stuck pine needle or a thorn. If you notice that they're just licking constantly, they're breaking the skin, they're swelling, it's affecting all feet, and they're itchy somewhere else or limping, to name a few, then it's time to take a trip to your family vet. Seeing a vet can help diagnose and treat, and it's important to avoid infection, which dogs will make worse by licking to soothe pain and itch. This article, written by Claire Mulroy, Why Do Dogs Lick Feet? Explaining Their Attraction to Your Paws and Their Own. And here are some tips to keep your dog healthy and safe. This is from Dr. Amy Flowers. Dogs bring tons of love and joy to your life, but they depend on you to stay healthy, to keep your pet safe and sound for years to come, and start with the basics. Get a vaccination schedule. Just like people, vaccines are one of the surest ways to protect your pup's health. They prevent serious, highly contagious diseases like parvo, distemper, and rabies, which can be fatal. The schedule and shots need to be varied, and they are based on the dog's health and where you live. So talk to your vet about what to get. In general, most puppies should get their first shot around 6 weeks and then every 3 weeks until they're 16 weeks old. Adult dogs need to be revaccinated every 1 to 3 years. Choose the right food. Your dog's age, weight, and health and activity level matter when it comes to what they eat. In general, make sure the food you choose has a statement from the Association of American Feed Control Officials on the label. That means it's nutritionally complete and balanced. Beware of feeding your dog bones, raw meat, or raw eggs. The American Veterinary Medical Association, the CDC, and other groups warn that raw foods can lead to serious health problems for animals, like infection with E. coli and other harmful bacteria. Bones can tear a dog's stomach or intestines. Spay or neuter your pet. Millions of homeless dogs enter shelters each year and many are killed. You can help prevent overpopulation by having your dog spayed or neutered, minor surgeries that keep them from having puppies. Plus, your pet can even benefit from these procedures. Spayed females have lower odds of getting breast cancer and uterine infection later in life, and neutered males have a lower risk of prostate disease and testicular cancer. The procedures are generally safe, but you can talk to your vet about any risks that they might have for your pup. Get moving. Dogs need to be exercised, the same as humans do. It keeps them at a healthy weight and it gives them an outlet for their physical and mental energy. They can help you control bad habits like digging, barking, and chewing, which dogs tend to do when they get bored. The best bet for your exercise? Dogs want to interact with humans, so choose activities you can do together, like playing fetch, walking, hiking, or swimming. Bonus, it gets you moving too. Brush your dog's teeth. Aim to clean their teeth every day or as much as possible. It keeps their breath fresh and helps prevent gum disease, which is linked to other health problems such as heart or liver disease. Ask your vet about the best dog toothpaste and toothbrushes to use. Also, watch for any signs of dental disease, such as bleeding, discolored teeth, or really bad breath. Of course, your vet should also check your dog's mouth during annual visits. And definitely keep your pet cool and warm. When weather gets hot or cold, your dog needs extra to stay safe and comfortable. When the summer heat is on, walk your dog in the shade or on the grass to keep hot pavements from burning their paws. Always make sure they have plenty of water and access to shade. If they don't have a lot of fur or have bald spots, ask your vet about sunscreen that you can apply. Also, never leave your dog in a car during the warmer months. The temperature in a vehicle can rise 20 degrees in 10 minutes. The longer they're trapped in there, the hotter it gets. Even if it's just 80 degrees outside, it can reach a sweltering 114 degrees in the car after 30 minutes. To protect your dog from low winter temperatures, your best bet is to keep them indoors as much as possible. For walks, consider getting a sweater and even booties to keep them warm, especially if they have a short coat. And also be careful around antifreeze. Even a small bit can poison a dog. So clean up any spills, don't let them eat snow, and wipe their paws whenever they come inside. Prevent parasites. Talk to your vet about the best flea, tick, heartworm, and other parasite prevention medication. These critters can irritate dogs and cause serious health problems. Heartworms can lead to heart failure and lung disease. Fleas can lead to anemia, and ticks can cause illness such as Lyme disease. Prepare for poisoning. If your dog swallows something that can harm them, call your nearest poison control center or the ASPCA Animal Poison Control Center and get to the vet or emergency vet clinic immediately. Don't take a chance. Even a small amount of chocolate could be toxic to a dog, while one ibuprofen can lead to kidney failure. And watch for warning signs. Dogs can't tell you when they don't feel well, so keep your eyes open for signs that something is off. Contact the vet if you notice warning signs of health problems, such as change in their poop or pee, any change in their eating habits, vomiting, discharge from the eyes, nose, or other places on the body, bald patches, very bad smells from any body part, a lot of licking or biting, a spot on their body, coughing, and weight loss. Also, watch out for odd behaviors. If your dog suddenly seems very aggressive or sleepy, it could be a sign of a health problem. All these tips to keep your dog healthy and safe came from Dr. Amy Flowers. Well, that brings us to the conclusion of Animal Companions for today. I do hope you've enjoyed the readings, and I invite you back again next time to hear more stories about the animals in our lives. Until then, this is Joyce Vesper for Animal Companions and for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Be well, everyone. Stay healthy. Be happy. Bye-bye.